Welcome to the Alan Watts Audio Experience, a curated podcast of some of Alan Watts's publicly available works in audio form. This podcast is by fans, for fans, and as such, if you enjoy and derive value from Alan's timeless wisdom, we would encourage you to support the ongoing hard work by Alan Watts's son, Mark, through the Alan Watts organization at www.alanwatts.org. There you can purchase the complete versions of Alan's works in audio and written form, and by doing so, you will help to support the noble efforts to bring his life-changing teachings to more people. So please go to www.alanwatts.org and help support their work. The link is in the description of this podcast and episode. You can also donate at alanwatts.org/donate. You can make a one-time donation of any amount you choose, and honestly, we'd urge you to do so because it's just good karma and it's the right thing to do if his works have brought you any value, which we're sure they have. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy this classic discussion by Alan Watts.
Americans have the undeserved reputation of being authors of the most materialistic civilization that ever existed. The undeserved reputation. Because never was there a culture so completely unmaterialistic. I define a materialist as a person who loves material and who reverences it and who delights in using it to its best advantage. And if you will examine the system of education through which most of our children are compelled to pass, you will discover that it imparts almost no knowledge whatsoever of any kind of material competence. Our education is exclusively bookish and is designed on the whole to train people to be bureaucrats, bankers' clerks, insurance salesmen, teachers, and we hope, intellectuals. It is a curious thing, but in its weak moments, it admits that there are a lot of people going through the scheme who really will never qualify for graduate school, not even perhaps for college. And for these, it must provide, rather regretfully, some courses which train them for other things. It's always a joke among Europeans that in American colleges you can get an AB, you can get credits towards an AB for courses in basket weaving. And this isn't really so funny as it looks. Because when it is the ideal that sort of everyone should go through college, if possible, you have to adjust to facts. You can't have a nation, you can't have a society in which everyone is always occupied in intellectual and computational pursuits. A few people have to be around who know how to handle the material world in a gracious way. And for these people, we provide only regretfully, as an afterthought, the people who might otherwise be dropouts in high school should be given some courses which would prepare them for trades in carpentry, metallurgy, even perhaps auto mechanics, furniture makers, cooks, and so on. But as a rule, because these kinds of education in the academic world are provided only with regret, are provided in a slovenly fashion. We simply do not relate to the material world. And we are increasingly lacking in any kind of competence in handling physical matter, except in such far-out cases as people who make jet aircraft and certain very sophisticated types of scientific instruments, where it is absolutely necessary that there be the highest degree of mastery. Aside from that, because of the lack of material competence, our life is extremely drab. It is simply astonishing that the wealthiest nation on earth simply does not know how to enjoy itself in a material and obvious way. Now, you would think, you see, if you were just an ordinary kind of a horse sense kind of person, that the richest nation on earth would have a whale of a good time. You would think that with all the money one earns, even at doing a factory job, that when the hours of work are over, that people would go home with all the money that they earn, which makes them princes by comparison with Indians and Chinese, that they would go home to fantastic banquets, marvelous orgies, and riots of pleasure all the night through. Now, this would simply be common sense to people who did not suffer from a Protestant ethic. But in fact, what happens is this, that we've got life strictly divided into two categories, work and play. Work, on the whole, is something that you do to get money, and you are paid to do it because so much work is so deplorably boring that nobody wants to do it, so they'll pay someone else to do it instead. So while you do it, you watch the clock. You put in your hours, and then you get money for having done it. Then you're supposed to go home and enjoy yourself and have fun. Well, so what do? You get home, and instead of having fun, the main thing is to watch TV. And TV is an electronic reproduction of existence, which is cut off from you by a glass wall. It has no smell. If you're very rich, it has color. But you are as in a zoo, where you look at something beyond the bar, where it says, do not touch the exhibits. You cannot touch it. You cannot mingle with it. You merely witness it in a passive way. And while you do this, you are served a TV dinner, which is something that was originally animal and vegetable, that has been frozen so as to deprive it of almost any taste at all. It is then warmed over, and you eat it, not because you enjoy eating it, but because it's good for you. It enables you to continue living because it has been carefully studied that it has in it exactly the right amount of calories, carbohydrates, and vitamins. And many of such preparations are served with a small label which contains a scientific formula on them as to all the good things for you which it contains. It tastes of nothing whatsoever, and you eat this while you watch this show going on. You may wash it down with a soft drink that's vaguely alcoholic called beer. And in the meantime, you get absorbed by the spectacle going on in front of you, in which you do not participate, you merely witness it. And it goes on long enough for you to be tired enough to go to sleep. This is supposed to be a life of pleasure. Generally speaking, you see, we really are not materialists at all. We don't love material. We hate it. And we are devoted to the cause of converting it as fast as possible into junk and poison gas. We are not people who love time, which is one of the measurements of material, and space, which is another. We want to abolish it. We want to get as fast as possible from one place to another, to get rid of space and to get rid of time. And the result of this is, of course, that as we get rid of space and time, as we make all places almost immediately accessible by jet aircraft, all places become the same place. So naturally, the tourist who is beguiled into taking a holiday in Honolulu asks, is Honolulu still somewhere else? Is it still a land of girls in hula skirts and naked breasts and palm trees and luaus and so on? Well, they'll make it like it is, vaguely, but of course it isn't. Honolulu is the same place as Coney Island, Atlantic City. Tokyo is just the same. It is simply an extension of Los Angeles, one of our suburbs. Because the faster you can get from place to place, the more you have conquered the limitations of time and space, the more everywhere is the same place. So the differences between different cultures, the differences between people, the things that we want to see when we go to foreign places are increasingly unavailable, except as something provided in a phony way for the entertainment of tourists to deceive them into the idea that they really did get somewhere else. And look at another aspect of this. One of the basic things about material existence is, of course, eating, food. And as I just indicated, we eat, as in the case of the TV dinner, food that is good for us. You know, it's always said that the French eat with gusto, but the British eat apologetically. And we've inherited the British tradition. We eat in a way, it is a rather animal to eat. It's a little vulgar that you have to chew food and stick it down into your stomach and it passes through your intestines and so on. That's rather degrading. It means you are, after all, an animal, not simply an angel. And therefore, there should be good reason for doing this vulgar act. And the good reason is that it's healthy. And therefore, when you eat food, really, ideally, it should all be concentrated into a pill so that you wouldn't have to waste time, valuable time, over meals. But take in the necessary ingredients for the rather shameful fact that we have to exist in physical bodies and get rid of it. And so, therefore, when you study in general the art of cooking in the United States, from coast to coast, it is pretty poor. It is not something that is done out of love, but something that is done out of duty. And so we are great adepts in what I will call eating the menu instead of the dinner. Because the dinner itself is thrown together in a hurry. It's simply a job. All sorts of people who have a certain amount of professional training cook, not because they like cooking, but because it's a job through which you can make money. Money which is perfectly abstract and inedible. This is a fallacy, you see, this division between work and play. That anybody who regards being a cook in a restaurant something which is simply a job which you have to do in order to make money, and therefore can go out and have fun in something else besides cooking, has been absolutely deluded. he has been persuaded to spend a very substantial part of his life doing something which he hates doing in order that he may earn the wherewithal to do what is really fun later on. And this, insofar as our education is oriented towards training people for jobs, this is the colossal fallacy in it. The only jobs worth working at are those which you thoroughly enjoy. And it is possible to enjoy thoroughly being, say, a cook in a restaurant, if you are allowed to take delight in it and to reverence the fish, the flour, the vegetables, the fruit, which are provided for you to work with. But as things stand, what happens is exactly the reverse. You go into a restaurant where they give you a menu which probably has colored photographs on it of each dish. And it says something like this: filet of Colorado mountain trout, fried to a delicate golden brown in breadcrumbs, garnished with fresh garden peas, French fried potatoes and lemon wedge. The last time I encountered this, it was in a restaurant where they have the nerve to keep an open kitchen. And when I saw the so-called filet of Colorado mountain trout, incidentally, this was in Wyoming, it was a severe rectangle of some off-white substance which rattled when it hit the griddle. The whole thing was completely mechanical, because there was in this process absolutely no love for the work itself. The cook, in other words, was wasting his precious time in life by going through the motions of being a cook in order to get money for enjoyment. Now, the thing that has to be understood fundamentally in the whole process of education for life is that money is an abstraction. It cannot of itself buy any pleasure whatsoever, because all pleasures involve skill and love. Enough love to discipline yourself to enjoy the pleasure. I live in, as was told you in the introduction, in Sausalito, which is a lovely waterfront town north of San Francisco, and we have harbors galore, filled with pleasure craft, sailing boats, motor cruisers, which for the most part nobody ever uses except for cocktail parties aboard when they're tied up. Very few people go out on them, because sailing is a difficult craft. These boats were advertised as something you ought to have to enjoy yourself, but when you got them, you found that you couldn't enjoy yourself unless you knew how to sail. Well, you didn't have time to do that because you were so busy making money. So all these boats just stand around. But nobody really enjoys them at all, because they won't take the trouble. But having been persuaded that money is wealth, take another case of this delusion. You can make a lot of money, say, in the grocery business by turning out shoddy products in excellent packages. You cheat on the weight and you cheat on the quality. You make more and more money. Fine. But when you've got it, what are you going to buy with it? Other people's shoddy products. We have cars with built-in obsolescence, which are nothing but toy rocket ships. We have as I said, various kinds of foodstuffs, which are increasingly lacking in nutritive elements. We have houses, which are made of ticky-tacky. We have entertainment, in which there is no participation. You're not allowed to join, you just watch. We have... We are busily fouling our own nest. Have you smelt the air today in this town? So it all smells of some kind of funny acid. And this is supposed to be people who are rich and wealthy and know how to enjoy themselves. It's a farce. And to some extent, the reason for this farce is the whole philosophy of education through which our children are being processed. I want to look at this, but I want to look at it first of all from the standpoint of bringing up children in this culture and the whole structure and nature of the family, because that's where the puzzle begins. Have you noticed that over many years, a large number of the jokes in most of our popular magazines where they print cartoons have to do with father as a clown? Take Dagwood in the comic strip. The incompetence of Dad, who is always some kind of an idiot, whereas Mom has to handle the real problems of the family and is therefore the realist in the picture. Dad is a clown. Why? Because he goes away to a mysterious place called the office or the factory, in which the family as such have no part and no real interest. He brings back a thing called money, and they want more of it, see, back at home. They don't care how you get it, just so long as you bring it back, because they're not interested in what you as a man do. And when you come back from the various rat races in which you are engaged making money, you're supposed to be a good pal to the children. Play with them and look after your wife and appreciate what she's done all during the day. But they have no interest in what you do. They couldn't care less. And furthermore, you as a father and you as a mother are expected to live for your children. Americans have an enormous sense of guilt because they have not done right by their children. And they're trying more and more to do right by their children. And they always feel they haven't quite succeeded somehow. We are child-centered families. Guilty, constantly feeling guilty because we haven't brought them up. Therefore, we call in every kind of specialist and expert and advisor to tell us what we should do with our children. The difficulty is that the family as an institution is not surviving in industrial culture. It is an institution designed for an agrarian culture. The family was built around the farm, where the children worked on the farm and understood and were brought up into the interests of the farm. The small shop or the workshop, such as you find in an agrarian culture. It's fascinating to notice today the transition from agrarian to industrial culture in a country like Japan, where it's been extremely rapid. Let's take the craft of carpentry in Japan. The Japanese have been some of the best carpenters in the world, absolutely marvelous, knowing how to make the most complex joinery constructions without even using a blueprint, doing it by feel and by eye. In order to train a person to do this kind of carpentry, he has to begin to learn when he's 7 years old. But as it is now, because Japan has transferred to being an industrial culture, you may not bring up your child in your profession as a carpenter. You have to send the child to school where it can learn to be an insurance salesman. The child gets through school, goes through high school, When the child gets out, it's not interested in carpentry, it's interested in girls. Has to fool around with that for a while and then get married and then begin to learn the carpenter's trade, and it's too late to be anything but somebody who follows a blueprint. And therefore, this marvelous craft which the Japanese cultivated for centuries is being lost. For what? I know many carpenters in the United States today who take enormous pride in their work, who love to produce a beautifully finished object made of wood, but they cannot find jobs because no employer can afford that time for his workmen to finish a product. It has to be turned out looking good on the surface with a sort of veneer and varnish, but anything thrown together on underside. So it'll wear out and they have to do another one. So nobody has any satisfaction in the job. And the reason is that the family no longer holds together. Because the family, the man in the family has to go away and earn a living that has absolutely no relation to his living relationship with his wife and his children. And therefore, naturally, he's regarded as a clown. When he comes home, he's not really a very good pal to his children, because the children would find a real relationship with their father in joining in his work with him. Every little child wants to join in his parents' work. They go into the kitchen. They would much rather play with the pots and pans than anything else. They want to help. They naturally want to join in, but they cannot. And therefore, instead of being allowed to join in with the real work of their parents, they are given propitiatory objects called toys. You may have a toy stove. You may have toys, dolls, and pretend that they're babies. You may not actually look after the baby because there might be an accident. So the children are propitiated with every kind of fake plastic thing that adults are supposed to use, especially those real adults who go out and fight the wars, you know, then they have a plastic gun. And the children are not satisfied with this. They are absolutely frustrated with it because all these toys fall apart in a hurry. They don't really work. They don't do what's expected of them. They are not real. And the child knows they're not real. And it's, you should see Christmas Day. When you really think about Christmas Day in the average family, and realize that after the children have opened all their fake presents, which were dolled up to look as if they were the treasures of princes, and they get the plastic toys, and they find everything doesn't work, and by time for Christmas dinner, they're in a screaming tantrum, because they know inwardly that they've been insulted. They are not allowed to participate in the real world. You are children. See, you don't really count. And so as the whole educational process continues, they are educated for unreality, for non-entity, by being progressively fooled. You see, it works like this. You know this story of a donkey who has a carrot suspended in front of him, and it's attached to a stick which is fastened to the donkey's collar. So we'll always chase it, but never catch it. So this is what we do. We send a child into kindergarten, and make him literate, more or less. Run, spot, run. And then the inducement is, if you learn this, you'll get into first grade. And wowee, if you do well there, you get into second grade. And so some of the kind of a come on, see? You'll go through the step-by-step educational process. There's going to be a big event. When you get out of grade school, you go to high school. And the pace is coming on now, see? And you're going to get step-by-step up through high school because of something at the end of the line. You haven't got it yet. There's a thing coming. College. Whew. Made it that far. And step by step you go on and you get to graduate school. If you're smart at this point, you stay there. But if you don't get into graduate school so that you can just stay in the academic scheme of things, you go into business. That's getting out into the world. That's graduation. See, now you're an adult. Well, then the first thing is you get into a sales meeting where they say is make that quota. And if you do, they're going to give you a higher quota. And if that thing is at the end of the line, it's there, and all the advertisements say, well, by the time you earn this and get that, you'll be able to have the right kind of car, the right kind of speedboat, the right kind of track lot, the right kind of clothes and everything, the right kind of drinks. And you'll be there. And finally, you work along at this, you're earnest, and about the year of 45, you end up as vice president of the company. Maybe president. And you say, I've arrived. I'm there. But I feel vaguely cheated because I feel just the same as I always felt. I'm there, but I haven't caught up with that thing I was always promised. And suddenly an insurance man comes around and says, wait a minute. You're going to retire at 65. We got a program for you. So that you'll be just right. When you're 65, you'll be able to drop all this business and do what you really want to do. At that time, you're not interested. Prostate trouble. Bad teeth. Oh, you're just falling apart. Because you ate all the stuff that you were making to make money with. That money goes nowhere. It's absolutely useless.
Hi friends, thank you for listening to this episode of the Alan Watts Audio Experience. We hope you enjoyed it, but more importantly, we hope it brought you real value and wisdom that you can put to good use. If you like what you hear, could you help us out by subscribing to the podcast? And please share it with the people you care about. And one last thing, it would mean the world to us if you could leave the podcast a review. Every little bit helps, and we all know the world could use a little more of Alan Watts' timeless and invaluable wisdom. So please subscribe, share, and leave a review if you feel so compelled to do so. And if you do, we thank you so much in advance, and we wish you all the best. To purchase the complete works of Alan Watts, please visit their official website at www.alanwatts.org. You can also donate any amount you wish to help support their efforts by going to alanwatts.org/donate. The link to both are in the description of this episode.